Accession number 19912, Reel 4.
Mr. Weinbau, Reel 4.
So I asked a Marroquin sergeant to take him back to the prisoner camp, and I don't know what afterwards did happen to him. In Tunis, the first Free French Division was taken over from General Brosset, because Koenig was called back to London and for other things. General Diego Brosset was born in Argentine, spoke fluently Spanish. He was one of the most fantastic generals I ever have met. He was, when I met him, the first 44 years old, and had a terrible hate against the Germans. He was a profound democrat and a human being. He never met out anything of his rank, and he himself said, "I don't think I am really a general, but my division is a real division." When he wanted something to say to me, which the others he didn't want to hear, he spoke Spanish to me. When he heard of me, he ordered me immediately to his headquarters, which was the QG 50, 50s headquarters of the 1st Free French Division. And I joined him in the headquarters, and he was a fabulous comrade at the same time as a superior. He never used after service or during the battle his rank as such. I am the who commands, but I take this before how much he was loved. You can see by it that when he was killed in France after the Battle of Compiègne, there was nobody who didn't cry. I cried like a child. I couldn't understand that he was dead, and still today, it was such a camaraderie, such a fantastic human being, you can't believe. One of these days, when I was with him in the headquarters, a major made a very anti-Semitic observation against, not against me, but with me. He said, "You know, you are the only Jew I know who had some guts and he has some courage." I got furious, and I said to him, "You damned idiot." I went to Brosset and told him. The next morning, he called all the officers together, and he said, "Did you really say that?" He said, "Yes." "Are you staying to this, what you say there?" said, yes. Now, I will tell you something. In my division, no officer, what rank ever, is allowed to make such a terrible observation. I will degrade you to a common soldier right now. And he asked the colonel to take off his signs of major, and he became a second, what we call deuxième classe, which is a common soldier. I don't know what you call that in the English army. So thereon you can see what kind of man he was. We had another thing, a very funny thing with him in Italy. We were sleeping on the ground, and also he was sleeping during a battle. And in the night, when it calmed down, and one of the sergeant majors who was with us, he said, look, his cap he has there. Let me have it. But he wasn't sleeping. And Sergeant Major put that cappy on, and Brosset turned and said, oh, that is good. Now I have a general who can command, and I wash my hands. See, I think any other general would have said something if that would have done a Sergeant Major. But, I mean, we knew that he was a comrade at the same time. He was really a fantastic man. So far. And we went to Italy. It came to the battle of the Garigliano. I don't know if you ever heard of it. Garigliano was a terrible battle, which today in Paris, one of the bridges is the bridge of Garigliano. That was against the Oscar Line. The Oscar Line was in the Apennine and was into the rocks. They had put, the Germans had the defense line put into the rocks. And what was it? In 33, I think it was the 4th of May. I'm not sure. I don't remember exactly the date. I should. I would have to look into my book, which I wrote, because there I put the date exactly. We got orders after the engineers had cleared the minefield, which did go down a mountain, but this mountain was on the opposite of the river Garigliano, and was mined completely. But the officers had were able to open up a gate so the tanks could be put down into the field to start the battle against the Oscar Line. It was very difficult. At 11 o'clock in the evening, 2,000 guns, Allied guns, opened fire during 2 hours. And during these 2 hours, I myself with my comrades had to put through this gap the tanks without that the Germans knew that we put a whole tank division down into the field.
What was your particular job?
I'll tell you about it. Now, we had to go backwards, a cigarette in your mouth, so the driver of the tank could see me, and a little light here.
On your chest.
On the chest, and go backwards down during good about half a mile. Any false pass of us, we would have been killed immediately because it was full of mines and these landmines, which you put your foot on and up you go. We did this during the bombardment. We put a whole division down of American tanks, and we put half a division of Free French tanks down into the battlefield during this terrific bombardment. At 2 o'clock in the morning, it was completely dark. We thought that at least the Germans would have been unable now to use their big guns. I got up and looked if there were more still to go down, to get down. There wasn't, so I went a bit backwards where the guns of our division were bombarding. When one of these big guns fired backwards. You know what that is? When a gun fired backwards. I was the only survivor, but was thrown about 200 yards away on the field. I never have understood why. And often I have asked me why. In all these terrible battles, I have never had a stretch. So I went immediately after that to the headquarters and waited for the orders. At 2 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, after 3 hours of terrific bombardment of 2,000 heavy guns, you can't imagine what that is, you can't even hear anymore your own word. We thought that the Germans were unable to answer. Then certainly they opened up, and everybody in Brussels said, "Down, down!" And he stood there like a tree, didn't move. And I said to him, without calling him by his rank, nothing, I said, "Diego, you fool, go down, you yourself." He did so and said to me, "Don't you ever in battle call me Diego and give me any advice." But I think he was glad that somebody did. So at 10 minutes later, the attack order of attack came, and you wouldn't believe the American tanks didn't move. Brosset got very annoyed, and he said to me, "Go down, put the pistol on the head of the tank commander and tell him if he doesn't move, you will shoot him immediately." I said, "General, I can't do this." He said, "That is an order. I need this damned. I didn't do this for tanks all getting down and they don't move." So again came the order, and they didn't move. Moving were only the French. So I went down and told the commander, took my pistol out and said to him, "Now you go, or I have order to shoot you." He looked at me and gave orders, and they started to advance. I never found out what happened there, why he did not move. I don't know, can't tell you. One of my best comrades was killed, and I must say that the aumônier, a Catholic aumônier, he was dying, and he stood by him, and he talked to him in Hebrew and helped him to die. It was a terrible thing, but he died peacefully. Another comrade of my group went up the hill all by himself, only with a machine pistol, and took 100 Germans prisoner. We couldn't believe it. He got naturally the highest decoration ever anybody got. To get into that Oscar line, taking him without anything looking left or right with his machine gun. 100 German prisoners. The battle did go on all day. And then we took the prisoners, and the German did go back. And something did hit me. I saw some soldiers who did take away their ensigns on their head.
Their insignia.
Their insignia. And I knew exactly what that meant. That meant that they were SS. So I said to my comrades, "I will not admit any SS being prisoner. In no way. They have done too much things to us. And I want to know who are the SS people." So we lined the prisoners up before a very big, a house like that, very big house. And I told them, "No, you tell me who of you are from the SS, from the Waffen-SS. If you don't, I will kill one after the other. We'll shoot him without any questioning." So we took the first. He said, "I don't know any." We took him behind the house, shot in the air. So they thought people were killed. It did go on until we came to a very young soldier. He may have been 18 or 19 years. He started to cry, "I don't want to be shot. I don't want to be shot. I tell you who they are," he told us. And then I said to my comrades, "The others up here," and because in between them were also some of the SS, we sundered them out. They looked. They couldn't understand that we were not Nazis, that we did not kill just to kill. And the SS were arrested, and they got to a special tribunal formed and got hard labor. I don't know where they shipped them. But they were specially treated, and I was right. because you will see later on that I was right, that to do that. So we advanced in Italy quite good. Monte Cassino, we were on the left of the Polish brigade, and we fought very hard Monte Cassino, as you know, but nothing specially actually happened. But the battle did go on up to Tivoli, on the way to Rome. In Tivoli also the Germans made a halt and defended the city of Tivoli very hard. We had two heavy losses, and Brosset decided to call the 8th Army Tank Division in. He asked Montgomery to send him the 8th Army Division from the Desert Fox, you know. They were also in Italy afterwards. And then he called, Brosset called me and said, now I want you to be, when they come in, to present yourself to the commanding officer, go into the tank, and as you know exactly the plan of the attack and the position, put the tanks where I want them. And that is, again, for you, a very hard but special mission I want you to do. I said, General, I never have been in a tank. I don't know even how to look out, how to know where I am. He said, that the commanding officer will know, but you have the plane, and you will tell him where to put the tanks in on the card, and he will know what to do. So I did. The Germans opened fire on us, and one of the grenades exploded in such a way that I got all this little splinters into my face. Next morning I came back to headquarters, and Brosset said, what happened to you? What happened in your face? I said, I don't know. What is it? I feel that everything is funny. He said, you have all splinters, little splinters in your face. What's happened? I said, I don't know. I don't feel anything anyway. So he sent me to the hospital, and there I met, by coincidence, another doctor, a Jewish doctor, Levi Leroy, and he said, nothing, that doesn't mean anything. I will cure you, and you will go out. I will bandage these things, and just for a few days leave it on, so that no any of the earth or something can infect. So he put all around, and I saw, when I came back, everybody laughed and said, what are you doing? You look like a mummy. I was looking in the mirror and I didn't know what to say. Everybody was laughing, naturally. So we came to Rome after Tivoli fall. We came to Rome, which had already been taken by the British and the Americans. And we had some rest. And we there was in Rome a French colony, and we invited all the French people to an evening, girls and very nice people so far, and a few girls who didn't mind to have sex with the soldiers. And 2 days later, I look at the group of my comrades, said, the hell, what happened? There are only four of us, what happened? And the sergeant major looked at me and said, don't you know? They all had sex with the same girl. They all had to go to the doctor and being looked after. And fortunately, by then, already penicillin was going, and everything was cured after a while. So sometimes you had very nice things also to laugh at and to have fun. Actually, before we came into Rome, something happened which was only really funny. At midnight, we were about 200 yards from the German lines. And one of my comrades said, I feel absolutely at this moment my wife thinks of me. I really can feel that she does it. It's a pity that I am here and she is in Paris. At the same moment, a German grenade came and exploded behind us. And I said, I see, nice wife you have, thinking of you. You see, so we had sometimes, you want to come over terrible situations. And fortunately, I have the humor still today. And I think somebody who hasn't got humor is no good for him, because that is kind of life which sometimes you have need to come over situations which are very bad. That enter parenthesis. Now from Rome, my division was ordered back to Naples, where we were prepared for the invasion for
Southern
France. I forgot something very important, which happened in Tunis. It is of importance. That's why I would like to go back and tell you. In Tunis, as we made a lot of prisoners, as you can imagine, because the German army was completely beaten, the Afrika Korps, we took many officers prisoner. And the officers were lined up, and Colonel Hillier asked me to come with him as an interpreter, to see what we could find out with the German by interrogating them. The first we did actually was to